Live on Leila Rahimi and Marshall Harris bring you five topics on their minds today on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Five on It is our noon segment. We do it every day. We are broadcasting live from Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. We are at Stadium Swim in a cabana because it's a tough life over here as we get ready for Circa's football contest weekend.
Number one.
All right, number one on Five on It. Which Bears player has the most at stake in tonight's preseason finale against the Chiefs?
I feel like it's got to be one of the running backs, right? Or perhaps the four-person logjam to figure out who's going to play swing tackle. I don't think it's Ozzie Trapillo because you don't do that to the second-round pick who's a rookie. So is it perhaps even a guy like Theo Benedet who didn't make the team last year in the same manner and is back fighting for his keep and showed such great improvement? It really is about depth in these types of games when it comes to pressure, with the cutdown day being on Tuesday. So I think that might be the case. It might be a guy like Ian Wheeler. It might be a guy like Theo Benedet trying to figure out how they fit into a team that has a lot of backups in certain positions in the position rooms.
Listen, you had the right position. I think you had the wrong player. It's Karan Amagaji, because he's not being offered the grace that maybe he deserves, but you are entitled nothing in the NFL. It stands for not for long. It could be really short for him, a guy that was a third-round pick a year ago and couldn't go through his rookie training camp the way he wanted to because he was injured when he was drafted. And now all of a sudden he looks around and is like, man, y'all got a whole lot more offensive tackles that are in here, including a guy that came in when I came in and he wasn't even drafted. Now he's getting more reps than me with the big boys. It's Karan Amagaji with a bullet. He better go out there, not get blown by when he's out there with the twos or the threes or whoever he ends up out there with, because it won't be the ones. Karan Amagaji, he has no margin for error. It's all on him, and I can't wait to see what he does in this last stand, if you will, in Kansas City.
There's a bunch of third round picks, and I say that knowing the Bears didn't have any third round picks this year.
Very convenient.
There's a bunch of third round picks who really have to earn their keep this season, if they're even staying on the team. You know, we had a Zach Pickens sighting in the games in the preseason.
Not a sighting.
But that's how I felt about it. Like, I want to see how Dennis Allen uses him as well, but man, I feel like these are the rounds, the third, fourth, and fifth are where you build your team depth. That's really where you can make some hay because, let's face it, the guy who's probably starting at left tackle is a fifth-round pick, for example. You need to play pay the players and play the players that you draft. That's the bottom line. I don't care at what point you begin your team. Those guys should be on the field, kind of like Jaquan Brisker, Kyler Gordon. So when it comes to the rounds 3, 4, and 5 with this team, I'm absolutely paying attention here.
Five on it. Number two.
What did you make of these comments from Dolphins guard Aaron Brewer?
Their first joint practice with Chicago, I felt like they were like some BS, you know what I'm saying? Because they was out there tackling and this and that. So it was like fake physicality, you know what I'm saying? Like, they out there playing tackle football and everybody else was out there playing like 7-on-7 or something, like, it's fake physicality. And you kind of seen that when we went out there and played in a real game.
What'd you think of what Dolphins guard Aaron Brewer had to say about the Bears, Leila and Marshall?
So, Leila, here's what's beautiful about this. I love it because it sounds like he was on a different program than the one that the Bears were on, and the Bears were more physical than the Dolphins were. And that's perfect if you're the Bears, because guess what? For the last how many years we've been like, why can't they be more physical? Offense, defense. The battle is run up front in the trenches. And what I've seen this year tells me that this team is as prepared as any team that I've seen the Bears, maybe in the last decade, as far as physicality up front, whether it's the addition of all the veterans. When you talk about guys like Drew Dahlman, Joe Tooney, Josiah Jackson, you can go down the list, right? And understanding Grady Jarrett exists, Dabo Odingbo, you have expectations that you haven't had. And I think it's good to set the tone by being quote-unquote over the top or fake tough. Doesn't matter what the Dolphins think. All that matters is what the Bears think and what their mentality is going in the regular season.
Well, I also think if there was an expectation as far as what it was going to be mutually agreed upon between these two teams, Shouldn't that have been discussed at some point prior to the practice? I understand that thud is the term that people use a lot rather than actual tackling. How do you describe thud in the NFL to the players? You think they might all have a different opinion of what that could be? So that's where I sit with this is, this sounds like something that was preventable if it needed to be, which I don't necessarily know that it did. But if it was truly a difference in communication and expectation, then where was the communication breakdown? That's what I'm trying to figure out. I'm even going to look past Dennis Allen's history as coordinator and the vast career resume that he has. I say that with a smile. But when it comes to if there was some sort of understanding as to what that should have been, then why wasn't that relayed to everybody? I have respect for Brewer. He went to a high school that does not play around. I remember one year they had 17 Division I athletes out of a single football class. So I understand the respect that goes on mutually among teammates and among players in the NFL, but something seems like there just wasn't I don't think the whole team played dirty. I feel like there was some sort of communication breakdown.
But also, on top of that, Layla, if it starts off and you realize, oh, this is more physical than we expect, why don't you step up and match that physicality? That's my point. It's a joint practice. We're used to joint practices getting out of hand and being a little too much. I think that's perfectly fine and acceptable, especially since it was the first joint practice for either of those teams, and they both had another joint practice coming the following week.
Five on it. Number three.
This is 5 on it on 670 The Score with Layla Rahimi and Marshall Harris live at the beautiful Stadium Swim at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Before we get to question number three, we're going to tell you about something we're giving away today. Keep listening for your chance to win a pair of tickets to see the Cubs versus Washington at Wrigley Field on Sunday, September 7th. It's all provided by Bosch Power Tools. The more you Bosch, the more you feel like a Bosch. Here's the question. How much do you put Thursday's Cubs loss to the Brewers on Craig Counsell's lineup card?
A lot. A lot, because I know who started that game, and one mistake by Shota Imanaga, even though the Brewers ultimately scored four runs, should not be the difference maker. And I feel like I say that all the time with this offense that can't produce, but guess what happened? The offense couldn't produce. We saw the same issues. The Cubs managed four hits total. Total. I mean, that's when it becomes absolutely frustrating. I'm sorry, it was five hits total. Forgive me. But the point is, overall for the series, and I found this number two, and it's disturbing. Do you know what Cubs batters hit against Milwaukee pitching in the entire five-game series?
I guarantee you it was well below the Mendoza line.
It was 187.
Yeah, that's
below the Mendoza line. They had five hits in the game. They were 0 for 8 with runners in scoring position. The player who was a hero for you the day before, who you decided was going to be a major part of this team from game one of the year as a rookie, you decided to sit for reasons I don't entirely understand. And then the rookie who had been the difference maker in Owen Casey, as I just mentioned, Matt Shaw, wasn't in the lineup until a very high leverage situation, because that's good for rookies. To put him in with runners at the corners and two outs in the eighth inning is a better move. That's the part I don't understand with the lineup construction and the how you used everybody after that.
I was hoping, after I saw the lineup going into this game, I was like, maybe I'm wrong, the same way I was wrong for game one of the doubleheader, in which Willie Castro was in the lineup. There was no Nico Horner. And Willie Castro hit a bomb, and the Cubs won the game. I was like, maybe Craig Counsell has some kind of sixth sense that I'm not seeing here. And that's fine, because he's the manager of the Cubs. They pay him the big bucks, certainly more than they pay me to talk about Craig Counsell and his decisions. But no, I was right. 11 men left on base, 0 for 8 with runners in scoring position. Layla, in a game that they trailed 2-1 after the fifth inning, they had the leadoff man on in each of the final four innings. How many runs did they score?
Zero.
Zero.
And not just that, but there were leadoff men on via a walk, like the case in the eighth inning. And I didn't just mean to make an Owen Casey pun there, but if your leadoff man gets on via a walk and it's Pecro Armstrong, don't you assume something is happening there?
Yeah, you would think so. But the other thing I want to talk about is Matt Shaw. You don't want to move him up in the order. That's cool. But if you watch the game the night before in which Matt Shaw had the game-deciding home run, I just don't understand how in good conscience that's the game you decide to take him out of the lineup. The Kyle Tucker thing is something completely unrelated to Matt Shaw in that I don't know why he was in the lineup to begin with, but to reinsert him into the lineup, to watch those four bats that I watched, and to ask myself each time coming up, why is he still in the two-hole? It's okay if you want to work him back in the lineup. Actually, that's a lie. It's not okay because you said a few days, and a few does not equal two, which is the number of days you actually gave him off. But to put him back in the lineup, right back in the two-hole, it's okay to move him to the, I don't know, bottom third of the order, or even the middle third of the order if you want to bat him sixth. But to bat him two, and to see him and Seiya Suzuki go 0 for 8 combined, painful to watch.
Oh, I still need to look up Seiya Suzuki's weighted runs created plus number.
Let me tell you, that number is on the decline.
Five on it.
Number four.
The Brewers have a 7-game lead on the Cubs in the NL Central with 34 games to play. Do the Cubs have a realistic chance of winning the division?
They did what they were supposed to do in that they got the tiebreaker. And there were times where they can't even count on that in previous seasons, where I feel like it did absolutely make a difference as to whether or not they were going to make the playoffs. So they were able to, number one, get the series, number two, get the season series, which puts them in a better position than where they were at this time before that 5-game set began. As to whether or not they can take the division, I feel like the Brewers, in a way, were still acting like the underdogs, even though they have a massive lead in the Central. It's hard to say because even in the game you just saw yesterday, you see how that team is able to take advantage, and then also how their pitching was able to, as we said, withstand a lot of early in the inning situations that seemed like they would fall in favor of the Cubs, whether it's walking the leadoff batter, whether it's the leadoff batter in the inning getting on base somehow. They're able to withstand it all. I can't say that about the Cubs. I can't say that about the rest of the teams in the NL Central. So it's going to be a very hard argument to make, but the good news is at least the Cubs were able to get the tiebreaker. It may come down to that if they have a chance to win this division.
You want the pro or the con first in this discussion?
Whichever you think is the best.
Okay, let me give you the sobering news first. If the Brewers, with 34 games left, simply go 500 the rest of the way, which they are fully capable of, 17-17, that would put them at 97-65, 97 wins. For the Cubs to match them, which is all they have to do, get to 97 wins, they would need to go 23-11 the rest of the way. That's better than winning two out of every three games. That's the bar which they would need to go. That's only if the Brewers play minimal 500 baseball. That's how the Cubs would have to do to catch them. That is the bad news, because I don't expect the Brewers to play 500 baseball. I expect them to be higher than 500. Here's the good news if you're a Cubs fan wondering if the division could possibly still be within reach. The Cubs have 34 games left, and they have, out of 30 teams, the 30th remaining strength of schedule in baseball. Their opponents from here on out have a .458 winning percentage. Looking ahead, they play 7 of those last 34 games against teams with winning records. And when I tell you the two teams, you're going to be like, oh, it's the Reds and the Mets. 4 against the Reds, 3 against the Mets. And we know how the Mets have looked since the trade deadline, since the All-Star break. Not good.
Yeah, that's the other one, though. I feel like they're two similar teams in similar situations where you're wondering when the bleeding stops.
So there is a path when you have 3 games against the Rockies and 3 games with the Nationals and 3 games with the Pirates and 6 games with the Atlanta Braves. Depends on how the Atlanta Braves, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde feel that week. And then 3 with the Giants and 3 with the Tampa Bay Rays. This 9-game road trip upcoming will have a lot to do with if they can make that happen. They need to go 7-2. 6-3 is not good enough. I'm going to start with that. They need to go 7-2 on this upcoming road trip. The other thing that's the X factor is, has Craig Counsell finally learned the lesson? Because yesterday he told me he had not. You got to be able to shuffle that lineup around, and you can't let Kyle Tucker's wants to play override the need of the team to be able to produce from 1-9.
Five on it.
Number five.
Final question on Five on It here on 670 The Score with Layla Rahimi and Marshall Harris live at the beautiful Stadium Swim, which features every sport imaginable playing across several TV screens and their giant here over the pool here at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Here is our question. Would you rather give up your favorite food or your favorite song for the rest of your life?
Yeah, it's a tough one. This is the question that came to mind last night as I was walking back to my hotel room after the beautiful dinner with you, Ray, with you, Layla, with our guy, Mitch Rosen. And we had these pierogies that had lobster in them. Technically, I'm not supposed to eat lobster. It's a shellfish. But I was like, let me just try it. Because I was going to just try a little piece of the pierogi. It was so delicious. I ate like two whole pierogies. And I was like, it's hard to give up stuff like this. But I've done a good job of not eating that stuff because I'm not supposed to have it. I think I would have to give up my favorite song. I think the song is the way to go because there's probably a chance that that artist has other music that you really, really love. Or there's a song that kind of gives you the same vibe. But the food thing, man, it's hard to give up your favorite food. What do you say, Layla?
I thought about it, but then again, I'm like, I don't really have a ton of favorite foods because I like so much food.
So give up a food?
Yeah, because I feel... No, actually, let me finish.
Oh, okay.
So I thought about it. I don't necessarily have a specific favorite food, but I also really don't have a favorite song. I like so much music that I feel like I would be fine. I would find something else to cure the need because, frankly, I listen to so much music that it's not an issue. So what I realized is I just consume too much.
Both musically and in as far as food goes?
Yeah, there's not a doubt. Like, I probably know the name of, like, 4 out of every 5 songs they're playing, if not, like, 9 out of 10.
You missed your karaoke era.
No, I'm not a karaoke person necessarily, but I just know the songs when I hear them. So I think it's still the song for me because songs don't always satisfy like your food does. Like the song doesn't cure hanger. So I think it's probably favorite song because I'll come up with a new one later.
What's your favorite song?
I can't think of a specific. I'd have to look at the playlist and what I've been playing the most recently to see.
Wow. Okay.
That's how I feel about it. Like I don't absolutely have to have a song. Like I'll come up with something else, and so will art. So I don't really have to worry about it. Now the industrial complex is another story. But they also say like you get to a certain age and then you can't handle any more new music. Like that's a study that's been done. I am not to that age yet, which I feel good about.
That is a good thing. That's definitely a good thing. I don't like giving up the food thing. The song, I can give up one song. Because as you just said, new songs will be created. It's a lot easier to create a new song than it is a new flavor, per se. I've had a lot of flavors. And I feel like I'm across the rainbow on the flavors. The songs, there's always going to be a new song around the corner. That was number 5.
Now I feel like we've closed it out properly. Coming up next here on 670 The Score, Raheem Ian Harris, as we broadcast live from Stadium Swim. And the music is going here. And right now we have a good look at the Tour Championship on the big screen. They had the Cubs game on Marquee live for us yesterday while we were at the pool. We have guests coming in as well because as part of Circa's football contest weekend, they have a lot of really cool panelists and a lot of really fun guests. So we stole one. One of the favorites of the midday show, Sam Munson, now of the 33rd team, a great football mind, will join us here live from the cabana at Stadium Swim to talk Bears, NFL news, and more. That is next on Raheem Ian Harris on The Score.